You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King.
Carl. I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Carl. Dragon.
King. Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to When It Was Cool Wrestling. I'm Carl Stern. Thank you very much for joining me here in our rotation of classic wrestling shows. We mix things up here when we talk wrestling at whenitwascool.com, wrestlingobserver.com, and figure4online.com. Alternating between topics, keep things interesting. We are around to our retro magazine review, and I'm going to go back to the fall of 1983 for an issue of a quarterly magazine called Wrestling Superstars Sports Review Wrestling Series. This is part of the After Mags, the Weston family of magazines. Quarterly, they would put out these various specials like Wrestling Superstars or Wrestling 1983 or something like that. There were several of these, and this is a I don't think I've ever read this magazine before. I don't remember having this back in my youth. So we're going to go through it. For me, this would be the first time ever, Wrestling Superstars. And I know I've been concentrating a lot on 1983 pro wrestling here recently. We're in the long-form history of wrestling series on that show. We're about midways into 1983 at this point. We've been going through the 1983 Wrestling Observer newsletters over on our Patreon at When It Was Cool, if you're a member of that. If not, check it out, and you can listen to those shows as well. Usually they run well over an hour as we go through every page. The Wrestling Observer newsletter was a monthly periodical back then. We go through that. I have all those from 1983. Because I am working on a special project that I hope to announce very soon, a major project dealing with the archiving and chronicling of pro wrestling history in 1983, so I hope to have more on that soon. So that's why we're kind of leaning into 1983 a little bit right now. Not to mention it's 2023, so you've got that anniversary type tie-in as well. So let's jump into it now. I love the cover to this magazine. This has Tommy Rich and Larry Zbysko kind of facing off one another, sort of early version of Photoshop, as they're put on a yellow and red background with Gordon Soley in the middle and the World Championship Wrestling or Georgia Championship Wrestling logo between the two of them. You know, this isn't a lot of people's favorite era of Georgia Championship Wrestling. A lot of people were down on it during this Larry Zbysko era, where he came in and bought the national championship from Killer Brooks. Mr. Wrestling 2's involved. Now we're talking Tommy Rich And creatively, yeah, they were struggling a little bit here, but I actually like this era of Georgia Championship Wrestling with the notation that I realize it's not the best era. But this is probably the era I saw the most. Now, I didn't have cable television at my house, okay? So I lived out in a rural area, no cable TV. Still to this day, there's no cable TV. If you see any of the cable channels, you have to have a satellite dish. We have never had cable. But in town proper, in the corporate limits of the town I lived near, they did have cable television. So I had, you know, friends from school who lived there. And if I were to ever go over there on the weekend or spend the night or whatever, I loved doing that because we'd sit up all night watching night tracks on TBS, music videos. And then we could watch the Georgia Championship Wrestling show, WTBS Wrestling, which was great because that was like big time, big league wrestling, and I would love doing that. So I saw probably more of this time period than any of the other stuff. Also on the cover, it says, Special Section, Gordon Solie's Personal Analysis of World Championship Wrestling's Superstars. And not only do we have Tommy Rich and Larry Zbyszko, but we also have an inset of the Iron Sheik, Tony Atlas, and Precious Paul Ellering, who looks absolutely ridiculous in some sort of cape and mask attire he's wearing. It looks like a Dollar General version of Jesse Ventura, but a very striking cover. I love the colors on this, the red and yellow stand out real good with the light blue World Championship Wrestling logo and Gordon Solie standing there. This just looks like WTBS Wrestling here on the cover. All right, page one, we get Superstar Grapevine. And this is sort of their news section. Now, you got to remember, cover dates on these magazines ran several months ahead. So even though this is fall of 1983, truthfully, the stuff we're reading about is probably going to be from back in the spring of 1983. So let's see what it says here. We have a photo here. NWA official Sandy Scott sees to Roddy Piper having determined that Roddy was unfit to continue against Greg Valentine. Valentine was declared the new U.S. champion. Roddy Piper is considering surgery to repair his left ear, which was severely damaged in a U.S. title match with Greg Valentine. Piper and Valentine were battling each other outside the ring, grabbing the U.S. belt off the press table. Valentine repeatedly smashed the left side of Piper's head. Blood soon began pouring out of Piper's ear as the two combatants returned to the ring. Valentine continued to concentrate on mutilating Piper's ear with the belt. Piper fell to the mat and tried to get back to his feet, but again and again he fell back to the canvas due to what was later diagnosed as damage to the inner ear. NWA official Sandy Scott, who was watching the match at ringside, told referee Ron West to stop the match before Piper lost his ear. The match was halted, and Piper's ear was saved, but not his belt. Valentine was awarded the U.S. championship. Interesting to mention Ron West there. I got to know Ron West pretty well before he passed away a number of years ago. I really liked Ron West. He was a good promoter and you know, ran a lot of towns for Ron Fuller and stuff, and worked in a lot of different areas, not just Georgia wrestling, where of course I guess he was probably best known, but Southeastern wrestling, Continental wrestling, Bill Watts Mid-South wrestling. Ron West was kind of all over the place doing lots and lots of jobs. Really liked Ron West. The next story gets truncated because it's going to be continued on page 56. But basically it says everybody in the Georgia area seems to have belt problems lately. Larry Zbyszko, for example, is now the former national heavyweight champion. NWA president Bob Goggle stripped him of the title in full view of millions of wrestling fans watching at home. As Goggle took the belt away, Zbyszko became frantic. He screamed, "I paid $25,000 for that belt. You can't take it away from me. I paid good money for that belt." When Goggle finally had the belt completely in his possession, Zbyszko offered him $100,000 for it. Goggle simply smiled and left the scene. He could have bought the entire Kansas City territory probably for that amount of money. Ric Flair has had his problems with Bob Goggle as well. Reluctant to sign for an NWA heavyweight title match with Tony Atlas, Flair was handed a contract by Bob Goggle and told to sign it. "If you don't," Goggle told Flair, "I'm taking the heavyweight belt away with me today." And, of course, it looks like Ric Flair signed the contract before we're shuffled over to page 56 for more. Next page is the Superstar interview. And, again, these are fake interviews. Big John Studd is the supposed person being interviewed here. Nice big photo of John Studd. The interview was supposedly conducted by Stu Sachs of the magazine. And the intro reads, "His boasts are as large as his immense frame. Weighing 364 pounds and standing nearly 7 feet tall," all that, of course, exaggerated, "John Studd claims that no man in professional wrestling can body slam him. Although, Butch Reed claims he succeeded in doing so last year in Florida. Currently in the WWF region, Stud is engaged in a feud with Andre the Giant. Stud claims to be the one and only giant in wrestling, and Andre is determined to prove otherwise. His manager, Fred Blassie, has been credited with infusing a new sense of anger and hostility in the hulking giant, as well as providing him with an insight into WWF wrestlers that is necessary to win important matches. With or without a manager, John Studd is one of the biggest men in all of professional wrestling, a competitor to be feared if not admired. You know, a lot of people down on John Studd. You know, he was very slow and plodding, but I gotta admit, I like John Studd. I like big John Studd. I liked his look. You know, he's this big guy. He's not a giant. He was obviously not a giant then, but he was this big hulking guy. I like the white long trunks with the red stars down the side. Recently, or last year, they came out with a Mattel Elite Big John Studd action figure. I bought it offline to have in my collection. Liked Big John Studd. I don't know why. I just thought he was a pretty cool looking cat. And even though he wasn't the most fast or fluid wrestler there was out there, I still enjoyed Big John Studd. Still consider myself a fan of him. Not that I'm going to, you know, go out of my way to make a compilation of Big John Studd matches. That would be pretty slow. But I always liked his, you know, teaming. Anytime he teamed up with Ken Patera or King Kong Bundy. I've always liked those big, you know, as Dusty Rhodes would say, clubbering giants. Anytime you got big dudes fighting, that's right up my alley. The next article says, Dick the Bruiser, I have to destroy the man who wants to be me. And, you know, by this point in time, Dick the Bruiser was well into his old age. He was, well past, you know, time he should have been retired. He wasn't a very big star anymore. And it's talking of all people, and this is a guy you don't generally hear much about because he'd never really done much outside the Great Lakes area, and that's Greg Wojciechowski. Greg Wojciechowski's bitterness grew out of an unfortunate political event. Unable to attend the 1980 Olympic Games, Wojciechowski turned to professional wrestling. Following a short scientific career, he realized he could build a reputation more quickly as a rule breaker. Dick the Bruiser wants to prevent that reputation from becoming widespread. So I guess Great Wojo here becomes a jumps from being a fan favorite to being a heel. Of course, he worked up there for Dick the Bruiser's territory. And even at this time in 1983, it was really on the downslope. It wasn't a very big or major territory at this point. Says the quote that was attributed to Greg Wojciechowski back in August 1982 issue of our sister publication, The Wrestler, seems quite prophetic a year later. Quote, "The most amazing thing in my life up to now is having made it to the Olympic team. I was given a gold medal by President Carter, but I think that if I'd gone to the Olympics and wrestled as I was supposed to, I would have gained worldwide recognition. But a lot of mixed feelings about that year," says Greg Wojciechowski. Imagine the wave of disappointment and resentment that must have washed over Greg Wojciechowski. Here's a man who in his amateur career captured 13 national AAU titles. Here is a man who is a member of the American wrestling team that toured Russia in 1973. Here's a man who is used to winning. When Greg turned professional in September of 1980, he was a scientific wrestler. That's after bag jargon, of course, for babyface, and rule breaker is their jargon for heel. He utilized skills he had developed in high school and college, but the mixed feelings he spoke of having back then have since caused him to alter his wrestling style. Yes, he was used to winning, but in the violent world of professional wrestling, scientific maneuvers alone may not always be enough to capture fame, fortune, and a championship belt. So, Wojciechowski decided to turn to the rule-breaking style of wrestling and rough-and-tumble style popularized by Bulldog Brower, Gene Kaniski, Bulldog Bob Brown, and Dick the Bruiser. I don't know who this guy Wojo, what's his name, Wojo Rumsky, who does this guy think he is, Dick the Bruiser asked incredulously. Look at his style, it's obvious. He copied my style move for move, maneuver for maneuver. Is something I simply cannot tolerate. And then this is another truncated article. In about, like, Greg Wojciechowski, if you've never seen him, he looks like former UFC fighter Chuck Liddell. Like, he literally looks almost just like Chuck Liddell when you look at the guy. He never had a big career, never really got much out of the Great Lakes area. He did have a, you know, very good amateur background, but never went anywhere beyond that. The Superstar Quote Book is next, where we have a bunch of fake quotes from different wrestlers. Kevin Sullivan is featured as the main photo on this page. This is back when he's doing his devil gimmick there in Florida. And the quote they give him says, "Why do these people fear me? Do they fear my power? Yes, they fear my abilities. Do they fear for the future of the state of Florida? Yes. Why do these people fear the Prince of Darkness? Because they are wise, very wise. The American dream should take a lesson from these wise people. He should learn the lesson before it's far too late to do anything about it. You have been warned." There's a quote from Magnificent Morocco, supposedly in here. Tommy Rich. Let's see what Tommy Rich says. This is a Georgia, very Georgia-centric magazine. Let's see what they claim Tommy Rich had to say. "Larry Zbyszko finally got his, didn't he? Ha! He finally learned that money can't buy everything. Can't buy a championship, that's for sure. He rented it for a couple weeks, but that's all he was able to do. He got to wrestle to win the title. He's got to wrestle to win the title, and if he wants to be called a champion, he's got to earn it. I hope that when they set up a tournament for the national title, it's me and Zbyszko in the final round. I'd love to show him what it's really like to wrestle for a title." I got a fake quote from Adrian Street here and David Von Erich. Next page up, how much longer can Steve O run from himself? Boy, they're doing some deep cuts in this here issue of wrestling review from the fall, wrestling superstars from the fall. Steve O. Oskanowski. Wow, I mean, we got him, Great Wojo. I mean, this is a B-team issue so far, if ever has been. Steve Oskanowski possesses all the qualities needed to be a star in professional wrestling. He's a talented athlete who possesses a crowd-pleasing scientific style. Beyond the ring, he is a dynamic individual who you can't help but like. Steve-O has the potential for success in a number of careers. He must decide which career he will pursue, and the time to make that decision is now. Of course, he's, I guess, best known. He wrestled a lot of places, Memphis and Georgia and elsewhere, but most known, I would say, for, you know, being one of mid-tier guys in the AWA. Here, Vern Gagne. Anytime I hear Steve Oskanowski, I hear it in Vern Gagne's voice announcing it there. All right, now we get to our special section, as talked about on the cover, Gordon Solie's personal analysis of World Championship Wrestling superstars. So supposedly this is an article penned by one Gordon Solie. Wrestling is, in a sense, a sport that is totally made for television. You can go in with three cameras and do a job on wrestling that you can't do on any other sport. You need as many as 12 cameras for a football game or a baseball game or a soccer game. In wrestling, everything is confined to a 20 by 20 squared circle. I feel extremely fortunate that in my early broadcast career, I decided to specialize in wrestling. I've had an opportunity to do a lot of traveling and have met some of the greatest athletes the world has seen. As far as my particular contribution to the sport goes, I've said this before and I'll say it again, no matter what the act is going to occur, the person describing that action doesn't make the action any more difficult or challenging than it really is. All this person does is perhaps add or heighten the suspense and the excitement of what is occurring. For example, when the great Carl Wallenda walked the high wire, there was often a drum roll accompanying the feat. The drum roll does not make the wire walker's position any more precarious, but it does heighten the excitement for the people who are watching it. I feel that is my role in wrestling. It's very much like that. I am fortunate that I'm able to do, I think, a reasonable analysis of the competitors while they're in the ring. I try to study them as much as I can from a psychological, educational, and environmental point of view so that I have, I hope, a fairly good working knowledge of the person as a total person, not just from what you see in the ring as an athlete. I'm happy Wrestling Superstars has provided me with the opportunity to present some of my own thumbnail sketches of 10 of today's top match stars. You've no doubt had the pleasure of seeing these athletes in competition on television, and I hope my brief expectations on these men, or excuse me, explications on these men, will provide you with some additional background and enjoyment of their matches. And he first talks about Tommy Rich. We got a giant photo of Tommy Rich there. In Tommy Rich, you've got a young wrestler on the national sports scene who has one of the most priceless ingredients any athlete can have, and that's charisma. To go to the opposite end of the spectrum for a moment, I know a lot of old golfing fans will remember Ben Hogan. He was a fellow who for years out on the tour was a sensational golfer, but he just didn't have charisma. Jack Nicklaus is an equally excellent golfer, but his charisma has carried him so much further than Hogan. It's incredible. Tommy Rich is like the Jack Nicklaus of professional wrestling. He came upon the pro wrestling scene and had that instant charisma. If Tommy didn't have that charisma, he certainly wouldn't be as popular as he is right now. He'd still be a superb wrestler, but I don't think as many fans would realize it. I think one of the reasons Tommy has such charisma is that he relates to people on one-to-one basis. His environmental and educational background puts him right in touch with everybody, be it a banker or somebody on the lower end of the socioeconomic scale. So he's basically calling Tommy Rich white trash here. It's what it amounts to. Fake Gordon Solie here in this magazine said, you know, Tommy's kind of dumb and he can relate to wrestling fans. Anyway, he goes on to continue. Not only is he a fine athlete, but he does have that vital, charismatic element in his personality. After all, who heard of Broadway Joe Namath until such time as he was going to beat the Baltimore Colts in the Super Bowl? Well, if you were from Alabama, you heard of him all the time. And when he did, all of a sudden he became the talk of the town, and suddenly the next thing you know, it was Broadway Joe all over the country. I look at Rich somewhat in the same manner. He doesn't have the, I would hesitate to say, the overbuilt body. He has never concentrated on the bodybuilding aspects as much as he has his own athletic ability. So he's white trash and he don't work out. Tommy Rich is more of a strategist. Yes, that's what Tommy Rich is, of course, known for, that strategic mind of his. Somebody say something about rocket science. Anyway, more than, say, a guy like Precious Paul Ellering on the power and super heavy muscles, Tommy has relied upon quickness, his great tendon strength, and his great skill in the ring and his skinny fat body. His use of the vertical body block is a classic example of that. A lot of people have tried it. It's a risky move, but he's got it down to the point of perfection. Pelvic thrust to the face. That's what that is. Tommy Rich is a young man who's got it all. Skill, charisma, and a willingness to go all the way to the NWA world title. He's done it before, and I believe he'll do so again. So there's a very passive-aggressive burial of Tommy Rich by one Gordon Solie. See what he has to say about Buzz Sawyer. Hacksaw Buzz Sawyer, who will literally die of an exceptional cocaine overdose by 32 years old. Buzz Sawyer is a man who... who is one of the most intense young athletes I've ever known, cocaine. But in my opinion, he is emotionally confused by the cocaine. First and foremost, in order to understand Sawyer, one has to examine his background. He was a great amateur athlete and his success in both football and wrestling. That is, in fact, true. I don't know all of the facets that comprised Sawyer's childhood, and I wish I did. I've asked Buzz a couple times about his childhood. He's been very reluctant to talk about it. I don't know whether his childhood had a very strong bearing on the way he conducts himself in the ring, or if he is so intense because of the cocaine, or other reasons. I suppose that's something we may never know. Oh, we'd find out, all right. To Buzz Sawyer, winning at all cost is the important thing. Buzz is the complete opposite of Killer Brooks, by the way. He's totally opposite from Brooks from the standpoint that I think money to Buzz Sawyer is secondary. I really don't believe that Sawyer is nearly as interested in the money as he is in the cocaine or defeating somebody, in putting somebody's shoulders down and making him submit. So he goes on to babble about Buzz Sawyer for a few minutes. Dick Murdoch is next. Dick Murdoch looking absolutely slobby in his Pro Wrestling Illustrated t-shirt here in this photograph. wonder what I got to know what fake Gordon Solie has to say about Captain Redneck here. Dick Murdoch is one of those rare individuals who can, I believe, touch the hearts and minds of any person in America. Well, maybe not every person in America. Some people of some skin colors, perhaps not. He typifies part of the ideological swing of this nation. This country became quite conservative over the past few years, particularly with the results of the last presidential election, be Ronald Reagan. In choosing Ronald Reagan, I believe the people of this country most certainly displayed a conservative swing and attitude. Murdoch is, in my opinion, very, very conservative in his political views. Wow, this is, reprint this article in 2023, and boy, it's got quite the slant to it. Is such that the fact hasn't alienated him from many younger people who are not wrestling fans. That might not have been the case 15 years ago, and it's part of the reason why I said earlier that he can touch the hearts and minds of anyone. Murdoch was, of course, a member of the United States Marine Corps. He has a very deep respect for the flag, for service, for duty to country. These are all qualities that this country for a while seemed to get away from. In a very real sense, I can't even do this Dick Murdoch article, oh my God, without thinking, you know, like he's got his KKK card stuck in his gym bag back there, and we're talking all the way around, you know, we're trying to say all these things without saying all these things. Good Lord. Dick is a staunch believer in the basic principles on which this country was founded. Oh boy. I'm trying to hold back here. I seem to keep repeating it, but it's so basic to Dick's personality, I find it hard not to continue to drive the point home. These days, you might consider Dick to be a frontiersman. Or a... Stop it, Carl. Stop it. If you will. Dick Murdoch is probably one of the last truly rugged individuals left in this country. Oh, Lord have mercy. Iron Sheik. Oh, yes. There's a big photo of Khosrow Vasari Zumit cameraman pointing to a photo, to a flag with a picture of the Ayatollah on it, believe it or not. I'm sure this is also greatly politically correct here in the year of our Lord 2023. Believe it or not, and many fans will not accept this, but I recognize the Iron Sheik is perhaps one of the greatest wrestlers I've ever known. The man is just as dangerous as he can be in the ring physically. He is a bear. That also has a totally different meaning in 2023. Unfortunately, through past associations, the Iron Sheik has not only become unpopular as an individual, but I think that many of his political views have become extremely unpopular as well. When I speak about Dick Murdoch, I usually point out he represents a conservative trend in this country's national character. And I believe the Iron Sheik is very antagonistic toward this vein of conservatism. It is no doubt a great part of the reason why there is so much tension and friction between Murdoch and the Sheik. What upsets many people about the Iron Sheik is that he takes advantage of some of the very basic precepts of this country. One alternative, of course, would be to react in a totally negative sense to the man. A lot of people would want this to be the prevailing attitude toward the Iron Sheik. What these people must understand is that if we adopt that attitude, then we would be destroying our own national foundation of freedom of speech. It becomes an annoying problem because the Iron Sheik does take advantage that we allow people to come out in public and speak openly about our country, about our system, about our way of life. We allow free speech to occur all the time, of course, and we must realize that the Iron Sheik is just a single voice among many divergent viewpoints. Now we've gone all liberal sideways in this here article. Gordon just all over the place with his political views here. Tony Atlas. All right, let's talk about Tony Atlas. Mr. USA standing there on page 32 looking, I mean, like, dude, Tony Atlas of 1983 could walk right out of this and make, like, Bobby Lashley blush. Make, like, Brock Lesnar blush. Like, this dude has massive shoulders, a massive chest. He looks just absolutely jacked to the gills. See what fake Gordon would say. Tony Atlas is a man I admire a great deal. What can you say about a guy who come from rather obscure beginnings and has dedicated his life to getting himself in superb condition? He's a great athlete who combines natural God-given talents with tremendous dedication and an incredible amount of self-sacrifice. That's how he built himself into what he is today. Can't think of another man in professional wrestling who spent more time in the gym pumping iron and building his body to its current proportions. Of course, other wrestlers have strong muscular builds. Hacksaw Butch Reed, for example, is a very muscular young man. Precious Paul Ellering has spent many hours in the gym, and he has several weightlifting titles to prove it. But I don't think anyone's going to argue me when I say that Tony Atlas is without peer in the world of professional wrestling with regard to his bodybuilding skills. And that may very well be true. But good Lord, Tony Atlas was jacked. He was humongous at some points in around 1983, 1984. Oh my gosh, Tony Atlas was gigantic. All right, skip some more of that. Dusty Rhodes. Let's see what good old Gordon has to say about his Florida friend, Dusty Rhodes, here. Most people are aware, I'm sure, that for a number of years, Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch traveled as the Outlaws. That's an important designation because I believe that Rhodes and Murdoch were, if you will, the folk hero type outlaws. Indeed, if you don't even hear of people being called outlaws anymore. The word outlaw has a certain connotation to it. The name outlaw has a permanency in the history books of the United States as opposed to thieves, murderers, and the like. Outlaws had a different distinction, one of romanticism and individualism. Dusty Rhodes is certainly an individual, and he has been so all of his life. He has that fantastic charisma that some people have and some people don't. Dusty has it. Dusty is the kind of man who at 8 years old could do the roughing on the plumbing of a house. Early in his life, he worked down in the ditches with a friend by the name of T.C. Lee. Years ago, it was T.C. Lee who told Dusty, "Man, you say you want to go for the American dream, you could be the American dream." T.C. Lee gave Dusty inspiration, and it was from that the American dream designation came from, and Dusty has lived by that all of his life. All right, so a lot of Dusty love there. Now, Larry Zbysko, our future AWA world champion and the man who had recently bought the NWA National Championship. You know, Larry Zbysko reminds me of what I've said so many times about wrestling, that it's human chess at its very best. Certainly, this man is the classic example of that axiom. If you pay attention to Zbysko's style, you'll notice that when he goes to the ring, he's not simply going to the ring, loosening up a bit in the corner, waiting for the bell, and turning around and facing his opponent. Zbysko comes toward the ring. Before he even gets to the ring, he's already got the referee engaged in conversation. He's complaining, "Hey, the guy's not in his corner," or, "Wait a minute, man, better check his shoes." No matter what the complaint may be, Zbysko has always got something going all the time verbally. His style here goes beyond the norm, and what he's doing, in my opinion, is creating problems for the referee and creating problems for his opponent at the same time. Crowd picks up on the fact that here he is coming in and starting to verbalize already, before he even climbs through those ring ropes. And consequently, he very quickly assumes domination of the tone and the pace of the match. Just by virtue of his verbalizing, he is able to get everybody upset and set them off guard. I could see where his opponent would listen to Zbysko complaining, and even though anything he's complaining about may not be valid, it's enough to take away your train of thought. It destroys the power of concentration, and it can cost a wrestler a match. Coupled with this attitude, the man is unquestionably a superior wrestler. That's no question about that. He's a great athlete, a great competitor. Again, of course, there's the issue of the national heavyweight title. The NWA is looking into the situation with the championship, and I thought his methodology in getting the title was reprehensible. But until such a time as a ruling is made by the NWA, Zbysko will retain the championship, unless somebody can beat him. He is a tough dude. He really is, and his past one-loss record certainly proves it. Of course, I guess this was written before they stripped him of that belt. Killer Tim Brooks is next. We'll skip over that one. Killer Tim Brooks was one of the greasiest. He's like Bill Ash. Like, he is the definition of a greasy heel. Precious Paul Ellering. I mean, he was, good Lord, Paul Ellering was a Jesse Ventura knockoff, if ever was one. Ric Flair, the NWA. Wow, this article goes forever. I would have to say about Ric Flair that he is probably one of the finest NWA champions we've ever had. I would certainly put Flair in the same category as former world champions Dory Funk Jr. and Jack Briscoe. Flair is the consummate athlete, and he always keeps himself in fantastic condition. What is really important about Flair is that he has been an incredibly active champion. He has traveled all around the world and wrestled literally hundreds of opponents. He's taken on the very best that anybody anywhere has to offer, and he's always emerged victorious. One thing about Ric Flair is that there are times when people become very upset about his flamboyancy, and certainly Flair has a great willingness to flaunt what he has won and what he has earned by virtue of holding the NWA title. He wears a $10,000 Rolex watch, for example. Flair doesn't mind flaunting that sort of thing. It's also very important for people to understand the nature of the individual. In Ric Flair, we have a guy who very easily could have sat back in life and still had it all. His parents are extremely wealthy. He went to private schools all of his life. He was sought after by about 9 different major universities, and he finally wound up going to the University of Minnesota. The point is, Ric could have had his choice of professions. He could have laid back in the lap of luxury, could have gone into a dozen of other professions, not nearly as demanding as the one he's chosen. But Flair made the courageous and difficult decision to enter into professional wrestling and has been capable enough to make it all the way to the top. When Flair gets out there and says that he is the best, he's got the 10 pounds of gold around his waist to prove it. Anybody who thinks that Flair isn't the best is more than welcome to challenge him. Flair has pretty well taken on and tried everybody, and he is still NWA champion, regardless of what people may think of him. He is the best, and I guess this was shortly thereafter, even though this is cover dated the fall of 1983. It's obviously covering events from the spring of 83. Harley Race beats him for the world title, holds it all the way, mind you, into almost the winter time of 83, where, of course, in November, Flair is going to win the title back at the first ever Starrcade. All right, then we get the second half where we get our round, the second half of these articles, the Big John Studd interview and so on and so forth. Let's see if there's any other specials here. We don't want to take any ratings or anything like that. Usually Superstars didn't have ratings in them. That was reserved for Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and then Inside Wrestling had the roll call of champions and so forth. Oh, here we do have ratings, as a matter of fact. All right, ratings analysis. So maybe these are the same ones that are in Pro Wrestling Illustrated, but let's take a look at them anyway. The top 10, and this is their of everybody, AWA, WWF, and NWA. The top 10 of all people here, Ric Flair, number 1, Andre the Giant, number 2, Nick Botwinkle, who is the AWA champion, number 3, Dusty Rhodes, number 4. Tommy Rich is number 5. Rick Martel's number 6. Roddy Piper, number 7. At this time, he's WWF champion. Bob Backlund's number 8. Number 9 is Kerry Von Erich. Number 10 is Hulk Hogan. Your tag teams, top 10, we have Ricky Steamboat, Jay Youngbloods, number 1. Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzell's number 2. Magnum T.A., Terry Allen and Brad Armstrong, number 3. The Masked Grapplers, this would have been Lynn Denton and Tony Anthony, number 4. Number 5, Mid-South duo of Ted DiBiase and Mr. Olympia. Number 6, the Freebirds. Number 7, the Samoans, who were WWF Tag Team Champions then. David and Kevin Von Erich at number 8. Number 9, Fabulous Ones, Steve Kern and Stan Lane. Number 10, the Midnight Express, and this would be, at this point in time, this would be Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose down in Southeastern. The NWA ratings, we have Ric Flair as the champion. Top 10 are Greg Valentine, Larry Zbysko, Crusher Blackwell, Dory Funk Jr., Scott McGee, Ron Bass, Bob Armstrong. He was doing his heel run down to Southeastern this time. Dewey Robertson, your future missing link. Tommy Rich, Kevin Von Erich, The AWA, the champions, Nick Bockwinkel, followed by Rick Martel, Hulk Hogan, Jerry Lawler, Wahoo McDaniel, Ken Patera, Jesse Ventura, Mad Dog Vachon, Jim Brunzel, Crusher Blackwell, and Greg Gagne. They don't even have WWF on this page. Remember, they've relegated WWF on down into the remove world title recognition, all that from them, for banning them from taking photos at the matches. The most popular wrestler, number one, is Andre the Giant. Most hated is Kevin Sullivan. We go to page two. That's where we can find WWF champions Bob Backlund, number one, Sergeant Slaughter, followed by Magnificent Morocco. Mike Sharp, yes, for some reason they've got Iron Mike Sharp, ranks number three. Jimmy Snuka, four. Big John Studd, Ivan Koloff, Rocky Johnson, Superstar Graham, Ray Stevens, and number 10, Eddie Gilbert. These ratings are ridiculous for WWF. Georgia, which we've been talking about. We've got Larry Zbysko, number one, followed by Tommy Rich, Tony Atlas, Killer Brooks, Dick Murdoch, Buzz Sawyer, Iron Sheik, Ivan Koloff, Ronnie Garvin, and Ray Candy. World Class, we'll just do the top five from these. David Von Erich, Jim Garvin, Kerry Von Erich, Terry Gordy, and Kevin Von Erich. Mid-Atlantic, it's a Crockett promotion, got Greg Valentine as number one, followed by Dory Jr., Jimmy Valiant, Bugsy McGraw, and the Great Kabuki. Florida, Ron Bass, Scott McGee, Dusty Rhodes, Kevin Sullivan, and Blackjack Mulligan. Mid-South, we have Junkyard Dog, Ted DiBiase, Mr. Olympia, Kamala, Mr. Wrestling 2. Southwest, Bob Sweetan, Tully Blanchard, Gino Hernandez, Bobby Jaggers, and Adrian Adonis. And finally, Northwest, Pacific Northwest, Billy Jack, Rip Oliver, Buddy Rose, Ron Ritchie, and Al Madrill. All right, that's it. That is Wrestling Superstars for fall of 1983. Again, covering largely the spring of 1983. They all, oftentimes, all these aftermags, oftentimes really ignore dates, specific dates, because they're so, you know, cover dated so far ahead. Usually takes a while for these magazines to be printed and ended up on newsstands. So, like, they'll say, you know, so-and-so won the world championship at, you know, in such-and-such location, but they don't necessarily give a specific date or anything. So, did that a lot. You know, mostly these magazines were a way to showcase photos of the different territories, and a way for those people who weren't living in a specific territory to keep up with other organizations. It was the, you know, they weren't, they were most definitely kayfabe, they weren't insiders, so it was a totally different thing from what the newsletters would become. And remember, by this time, the Observer is being published monthly, and we're covering it at whenitwascool.com. So if you become a Patreon supporter over at whenitwascool.com, we recently discussed the July 1983 issue of Wrestling Observer Newsletter. And then on the long-form history of wrestling, we went all the way through the month of July 1983. Check us out over at whenitwascool.com. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app to the When It Was Cool Wrestling Podcast, and you won't miss an episode. We cover wrestling history in depth and in detail, and hope you will check that out and support us. We could use your support. And I thank you very much for listening. I'll see you here again soon with another show.
Hey, everybody. Carl here from whenitwascool.com. I've talked to you a lot about our Patreon, which is the most important way you can support us. But let me remind you of what else we do. You can follow us on social media on both Facebook and Twitter. Grab the links off the front page of whenitwascool.com. Check out all of our free podcasts on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, and other major podcast outlets. Check out Dragon King Dark, along with Stuck in the Desert podcast, Uphill Both Ways, Wrestling with the Dog, The Thrash Metal Show, Life and Times with KZ, our new show, The Plot, Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show, Fireside Chat, and Heel Mustache podcast, plus many specials every month. Go to whenitwascool.com for everything retro pop culture and more. Hit that Patreon link for premium podcast content. If you're looking for something fresh and fun to listen to, then bookmark whenitwascool.com.